We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
China's state-owned oil firm debuts on the Shanghai Stock Exchange, plus tech salaries soar amid red-hot demand in cloud computing and data science, and why America's falling out with Saudi Arabia has thwarted U.S. appeals to pump more oil.
As the U.S. looks to focus on China and Russia and be less involved in Middle Eastern conflicts, our allies are feeling neglected and might no longer be willing to accommodate our requests.
It's Thursday, April 21st. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Russian President Vladimir Putin has called off the Russian military's assault on a steel plant in the strategic Ukrainian port city of Mariupol, instructing the army to instead block all entry and exit points from the last refuge for the plant's remaining defenders. In a televised meeting, Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu told Putin that Russian forces had captured the city and that only around 500 Ukrainian fighters remain holding out inside the plant. He said Russia had evacuated more than 142,000 civilians from the city. Ukraine didn't immediately comment on Russian claims of capturing Mariupol. Ukraine's government has previously said Russian forces control most of the city, but that it hadn't fallen. The U.S. Justice Department says it will appeal a federal judge's ruling which invalidated a mask mandate for public transportation. The move comes after the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said the mandate remains necessary for public health. The move doesn't change the state of the mask mandate, which can't be enforced unless the Biden administration wins its appeal or a stay of the court's order. Chinese state-owned energy company CNOOC has debuted on the Shanghai Stock Exchange and surged nearly 28% in its first day of trading. CNOOC, along with two Chinese telecom operators, China Telecom and China Mobile, was delisted from the New York Stock Exchange last year to comply with an investment ban introduced by former President Donald Trump. Journal reporter Rebecca Fung says these companies' ability to succeed on Chinese exchanges sends a signal about Wall Street's role in global markets.
The three of them actually combined raised about $20 billion from Chinese onshore investors. And this just shows that they can still come back home. And there is sufficient liquidity in the Chinese onshore market to welcome these listings and basically to absorb them. So the three of them really showed a path which might be followed by other Chinese companies as well in the future.
And we are exclusively reporting that billionaire activist investor Carl Icahn is urging BlackRock and other big index fund managers focused on socially conscious investing to support his campaign to improve McDonald's's treatment of animals. Icahn nominated two directors to McDonald's board in February as a part of his campaign to require the fast food company to stop constraining pregnant pigs in small crates. Suppliers have said those crates make breeding more efficient, while Icahn and his nominees say they are inhumane. McDonald's shareholders will decide whether to support Icahn's nominees or the company's slate at its annual meeting set for May 26th. McDonald's didn't immediately respond to a request for comment. It's a good, or at least profitable, time to be working in tech. With demand for labor on the rise, analysts and executives say that companies looking to fill key technology roles are having to pay up, and in the process, bloating already rising IT budgets. Journal Markets reporter Caitlin Ostroff joins us now with more on this trend. Hey, Caitlin.
Hey, Luke.
All right, so let's crunch some numbers, shall we? How high in demand are tech workers right now, and what are companies paying to fill those open positions?
There's an IT trade group called CompTIA, and they've said that, you know, U.S. employers have posted more than 1 million tech jobs in the first quarter of this year, and that's up 40% from the year prior. And so it's kind of one indication that we really are seeing a lot of demand for tech workers starting to come through, not just in the US, but globally also. There's another company in Poland that the journal spoke to, and they were saying that they were having to double the pay of some workers who were already highly paid just as an incentive to make sure that they stay with the company because demand is that high. We're talking about wage increases of 50%, sometimes doubling their salary from already high salaries.
And Caitlin, is this for all tech jobs or are some in particularly high demand here?
No, I mean, there is a certain sector of tech jobs that really, really is fierce competition, particularly cloud computing, data science, modeling, machine learning. So kind of that predictive modeling that you get from these big algorithmic programs that people write. Cloud architects are seeing salary increases of 25% from around the pandemic to now. And you're seeing software engineers go up a little bit less. And so you are seeing a bit of a distinction being made between people who are really doing the kind of cloud AI machine learning type of things versus, you know, maybe traditional engineering.
And Caitlin, what effect is this dramatic jump in compensation going to have on employers and maybe the economy as a whole, particularly in a period of already high inflation?
This is definitely putting pressure on companies to boost wages, maybe a little bit reactively to make sure that their employees don't go elsewhere where they are offering higher salaries. And so you are having CIOs and other tech executives sitting there and saying, you know, maybe we need to approve more spending on salaries. We need to offer additional compensation to certain employees so that they don't leave for other jobs. You're also seeing some that are kind of holding off for the moment. AT&T said that salary increases in the tech services organization averaged 5% for the past year, and Cisco Systems said that it was an increase of between 5 and 10% over the past year. And so you're not quite seeing that 50% increase that we're seeing in some companies, but it kind of does lend to the idea that, you know, companies are evaluating how much they feel they need to increase salaries in order to remain competitive.
Yeah, we'll see if those 5 and 10% increases are enough to retain the talent that those big companies need. That was Journal Markets reporter Caitlin Ostroff. Caitlin, thanks so much.
Thanks, Luke.
Coming up, America's longstanding relationship with Saudi Arabia is on the rocks. And for Washington, that comes at an inconvenient time as its diplomatic overtures, especially regarding Saudi oil production, go unheeded. We'll get the latest from our correspondent in Riyadh after the break.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
The decades-long alliance between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia is at risk over disagreements regarding oil production levels, security concerns, and the invasion of Ukraine. WSJ Middle East correspondent Stephen Kalin joins us now from Riyadh to discuss how U.S.-Saudi relations reached this current breaking point and what the consequences of this falling out might be. Stephen, welcome.
Happy to be here.
So take us into this falling out, if you will, between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia, which it sounds like occurred relatively recently.
It's been sort of a slow build, I would say, over the past year. After President Biden came into office, while he was campaigning, he had promised to treat Saudi Arabia as a pariah state. And that was largely in response to the killing of Jamal Khashoggi, a Saudi journalist in Istanbul back in 2018. So he came into office and in his first foreign policy speech in February 2021, he started talking about the war in Yemen, which Saudi Arabia is playing a leading role in, how the U.S. was going to end support for Saudi Arabia's campaign in Yemen and recalibrate its relationship with the kingdom. And that was going to include several things, including freezing a lot of arms sales. Saudi Arabia is one of the world's biggest consumers of weapons, and the president froze a bunch of those contracts. So from that point on, things have grown increasingly testy, and there have been a series of slights and snubs and perceived slights on both sides of the relationship.
So, Stephen, what does the U.S. want from Saudi Arabia right now, especially amid the war in Ukraine, that it doesn't seem able to get?
What Washington has been trying to get Saudi Arabia to do for the past few months is to pump more oil, which would bring down gas prices at the pump in the US and also in Europe, but also cut into the finances that Russia is using to wage its war in Ukraine. And they've received a lot of pushback on that from the Saudis. Partly the Saudis have a deal with Russia that they struck several years ago, coordinating on oil production levels. And they're really hesitant to break that deal, which took a lot of diplomacy and effort to hold together all this time. And on the other hand, they don't really feel much in the mood of doing the U.S. any favors because of the way that the Biden administration has approached the relationship in the past year.
How is the U.S. attempting to change this relationship? Besides a little shuttle diplomacy, I understand President Biden's national security advisor, Jake Sullivan, visited the kingdom last September. But what other steps can and is the U.S. taking?
So when Mr. Sullivan came, he was the highest Biden administration official to visit the kingdom. And in the months since then, there have been repeated trips by a number of officials, including Brett McGurk, who is the White House National Security Council coordinator for the Middle East. So basically the top Middle East official at the White House. Him and a few other officials, including from the State Department, have been visiting the kingdom regularly, trying to improve the relationship within these very narrow bounds set by the administration. So they've been trying to make progress, for example, on ending the war in Yemen, which is a U.S. foreign policy priority and also something the Saudis want to achieve. And there have also been the release of some arms sales, mostly defensive arms sales, over the past few months. So there have been lots of sort of shuttle diplomacy and some efforts in terms of making a tangible difference, but it really hasn't made the Saudis, it hasn't pushed the Saudi position. It hasn't made them feel like the Biden administration really has its back, especially on security issues.
And why, in the current geopolitical environment, is it important for the U.S. to mend this relationship?
One piece of context in all of this is the Iran nuclear deal, which the Biden administration has been trying to revive. That's really stirred a lot of security concerns in Saudi Arabia. And also this perception widely held within the region, especially by America's allies, that it's not as committed to the Middle East as it used to be, and that there is sort of this reorientation. And so as the U.S. looks to focus on China and on Russia and to be less involved in Middle Eastern conflicts, some of our allies are feeling neglected. And the risk for the U.S. is that some of these countries that have been friendly to us and that we've relied on in certain situations might in the future no longer be willing to accommodate our requests as easily if they're not feeling like they're getting their fair share of the bargain.
And is it clear what the consequences would be if this long-standing relationship between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia remains strained?
It's challenging to assess where exactly this is headed. There, of course, have been difficult patches in this relationship over the past 75 years. There have been times where the U.S. and Saudi Arabia were very upset with each other and took actions against each other. What strikes me as different this time is that usually in the past, the relationship at the highest level between the president and the king or the crown prince of Saudi Arabia has usually been something that helped smooth out the troubles in the relationship. And this time, what's striking is that some of the trouble is at the top of that relationship. The president has not spoken with or met the crown prince since taking office. And he said early on that he didn't want to speak with him, that he was going to speak with the king, although the king has designated most powers to the crown prince. So the troubling thing is, how do we get past this? We understand that there have been some efforts to coordinate a phone call between the president and the crown prince back in February. The crown prince ended up not joining that phone call. And now it seems it's difficult to see how they meet, how they talk, and how they get past this sort of very rough patch in their relationship.
That was WSJ Middle East correspondent Stephen Kalin. Stephen, thank you for being with us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
And finally, it's a sound that's part of the fabric of life in New York City. The two-note bing bong has been heard in New York's subway cars for nearly 9 decades, but lately it's gone viral, becoming a national catchphrase thanks in part to TikTok, where videos with the bing bong hashtag have generated 1.3 billion views as of Monday. Bing bong has now made it into raps, corporate presentations, and even a vaccine PSA starring President Biden and the Jonas Brothers. WSJ social media editor Haley Velasco says there's a reason bing bong is winning us over.
I talked to some experts in music and audiology, and they were explaining there's so many choices in the sound actually itself, that the tone, the 1-2 step of it, the octaves, and how it really does give a positive emotion and it triggers a memory response. And they equated those kind of two things to why it's really gone viral. To me, I went, oh, TikTok took it off. But there is the makeup of it that really helped it rise to the occasion.
And that's What's News for Thursday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening. Bing bong.